Welcome in another edition of the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. It is always great to have you with us. It is Final Four week, and yes, we are closing in on the Blue Ribbon Podcast Great American Adventure as we head out to the desert to see Chris being inducted into the U.S. Basketball Writers Hall of Fame and also check out the NCAA Championship game next Monday. Chris, what's going on? You got that speech all ready and ready to roll for the trip?
Yeah, I've got the speech done. I started it as soon as I found out I was in back in December, and I've tinkered with it many times since. And I've got it to where sometimes an old filmmaker, my son runs a film festival, and he told me about an old filmmaker that once said, "You don't finish a film as much as abandon it." and that's kind of what I've done with my my speech. I've just abandoned it, because if I don't, I'll constantly keep tinkering with it. And I think it's pretty cool. And sometimes when you're a writer, things just pop in your head and you don't know where they come from, but you just thank the stars that they popped in there. So yeah, got some of that in there.
Well, this will be my second Chris George Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And it'll also be our second time to see a national championship game together. We went to one in 2013 in Atlanta, where Vacata beat Michigan to win the championship. I mean, Louisville beat Michigan. It was a terrific game. Like, I remember that being a fantastic game in Atlanta. Yeah. Rick Pitino's Cardinals got the win that night. So, yeah, looking forward to heading out to Arizona and seeing the championship game. It should be good. We'll tell you the Final Four matchups here. They're all set. 11 seed NC State, really the surprise of this group, against number one Purdue, top seed Purdue anyway, at 5:09 Central Time on Saturday. And then fourth seeded Alabama breaking through and finally getting there. And then the top seed, the reigning national champion UConn, at 7:49 Central Time. All the games will be televised on TBS. Chris, I thought we'd kind of touch on each of the teams and give a quick thought on each one. That opening game, NC State and Purdue, the big man will be the big story with DJ Burns and, of course, Zach Edey for the Boilermakers. Purdue held off Tennessee 72-66 in what felt like a Final Four matchup in that Midwest regional final in Detroit on Sunday. Edey had 40 with 14 rebounds. He got to the free throw line. There was a lot of talk about that. 14 of 22 from the foul stripe and 13 of 21 from the field. Purdue only made 3 3-pointers in the game. The Vols, man, they had a fantastic season and maybe the best team they've ever had. But really, in the end, not enough help for Dalton Knecht, who scored 37 points but didn't have any other double-figure scores. And Purdue had something to do with that. But just thoughts on the Boilermakers as they head into this matchup.
You know what? It appears, now I wouldn't put anything past this miracle NC State team at all, but it appears that we're headed for a showdown of what I think with, and you know, that's hardly a Sherlock Holmesian deduction, what most people think were the two best teams all year anyway, in Purdue and UConn. And I mean, that's my prediction. That's what I think is going to happen. Purdue's just tough when you've got a guy like Zach Edey, and you know, you read all the stuff on social media about the 3-second violation and how he camps in the lane and all the fouls that he picks up. But on the other hand, and I remember this was true when Shaq O'Neal was at LSU and Dale Brown, I remember in an SEC tournament game, he ran out to the court to defend him in a fight against a Tennessee guy. Like Shaq needed any help. But I remember in the press room, he pointed out Shaq's arms and they were scratched and cut. And if you look at Zach Edey, it's the same way. People are just pushing and shoving. And so Rick Barnes said it best. He's a difficult player to officiate. He's just a unicorn. There aren't many like him. There aren't really very many true centers in the game anymore. And, and that's what he is. He's taken 2 career 3-pointers, and the rest of his damage has been done inside the paint. And he's just – I think he was somewhere around 435 in his senior class of recruits. And he has just really developed. Matt Painter does an excellent job at Purdue of – he likes to use a conventional big man lineup with a 4 and a 5. And he's done a great job of helping Zach Edey convert his size into some weapons. I mean, he can go over either shoulder and he can block shots. And he's a great rebounder. Obviously can rebound out of his area with his huge wingspan. So He's a weapon, but I'll tell you what, if any school in this tournament has somebody that can bang with him,
yeah,
it's DJ Burns from NC State. Now, granted, he looks like he hasn't played anywhere but the YMCA in about a decade. Not the best shape in the world, but he's a big dude. I tweeted that when Edie and Burns tee off, they'll have to measure it on the Richter scale.
Get out the seismograph.
Yeah, but I think that's going to be a good matchup. But Purdue, I'll tell you, they didn't need a lot of threes against Tennessee, and they weren't going to get them anyway because I think Tennessee wanted to see what would happen if they didn't want to let Edie go crazy, but they didn't want to leave three-point shooters open either and just get embarrassed. So Purdue didn't need to make a lot of threes. I got a feeling their guards are going to be tasked with making some threes against NC State because I think DJ Burns can guard or attempt to guard Zach Edey one-on-one. And then it's going to be a fair fight on the perimeter. Nobody's going to be left open. So Purdue will have to figure out a way to get open looks and knock them down.
Let's talk about the Wolfpack for a second. They took out Duke in the regional final 76-64. It's their first Final Four since Albuquerque in 83. That's hard to believe. Yeah. DJ Burns had 29 points. DJ Horn had 20. Kevin Keats does not play a lot of guys. He only played seven in that game. But the ones he puts out there are good, and they're really experienced. And you think about it, if Michael O'Connell didn't hit that banked-in three-pointer against Virginia to force overtime in the ACC tournament, we're probably not talking about any of this because they probably wouldn't even have gotten in. It's funny. I just happened to turn over and watch that game and saw too. That play and saw the overtime, and they just have gone on this amazing run since then. I really like NC State's guards of Horn and O'Connell and Casey Morsell. Man, those guys are experienced. They're really tough. With Vanderbilt, we've played them each of the last 2 years. We played them out in Vegas this past season. We played them in Chicago last year. To me, a lot of this game, Chris, depends on how tightly it's officiated. If they really let him play physical and they let DJ Burns get in there and battle with Zach Edey, it could be advantage to NC State. But if a lot of fouls are called and they call a little tighter, it benefits Purdue if they get to the free throw line. I think this is a really interesting matchup.
I do, too. It's really amazing, if you think about it, how close Michael O'Connell wouldn't have had a chance to hit that shot if Isaac McNeely of Virginia doesn't miss the front end of a one-on-one.
Yeah.
NC State was trailing at the half to Louisville in the first round of the ACC tournament. Where did these dudes come from? You know, it's just like, where were they all year? And now all of a sudden they're 26-14 and they've won nine in a row. And part of what they did, they started to change their defensive philosophy. Instead of picking up opposing ball handlers out past the three-point line, they started picking them up a little closer to prevent them from having a runway from attacking Burns, who always drops back into coverage. So, you know, stopping those guards at the point of attack has really helped them. And like you said, they don't play a ton of dudes, but the guys they have are dudes. I mean, DJ Burns, I saw him at Tennessee. I saw him in a summertime practice, and I remember how massive he was. But at that time, I knew he didn't have the work ethic to play for Coach Barnes, and that he probably wasn't going to be long for the world, and he wasn't. He left not long after and was immediately eligible at Winthrop. And then he turns up at NC State, and he was a power conference player after all. He's just not going to be in the greatest shape. And the thing about him is he's got moves. He kind of, belying his size, he looks like Baryshnikov in there sometimes. And he's also a great passer. I'm looking at NC State's stats right now. He's second to Michael O'Connell in assists with 113 dimes. So, you know, when he gets double teamed, he knows what to do with it. It remains to be seen whether anybody can handle Edey. He's just such a Al McGuire used to call it an aircraft carrier. back in the day when everybody had big centers, and he would have fit right in that era, the 60s and 70s. But he's just a force in there. And it depends on who you listen to and what experts, and somebody feel that he's getting too much of a break from the refs. The Purdue camp doesn't think he's getting enough. Some people think he camps in the lane. I'm not gonna opine on any of that. He's a great player. He'll be the two-time player of the year, and deservedly so.
I did think it was fun to see DJ Burns taking photos with the security folks and some others backstage before he left the arena. That was really fun. And you're right. I mean, he has really soft hands. He has good footwork. He's an excellent passer. I love the posting on one block and throwing the pass to the weak side wing. I always think those things are cool to get open looks for people. So he's fun to watch. Edie's just a force inside, and that'll be the first game as Purdue and NC State meet out in Arizona in game one of the Final Four. As for the second game, Bama's in that program's first Final Four ever, only the second Elite Eight for the Alabama program. I mean, they've had lots of great players over the years, but never really able to break through. They finally did. They beat Clemson 89-82 on Saturday. They shot the three at a ridiculous rate in that game, 16 out of 36. And that's what they do. They shoot threes or they score in close. Mark Sears had 23, the veteran guard, who's just been fantastic. Jaron Stevenson came off the bench, hit five threes. And Nick Pringle was really, I thought, the star of that game. He had 16 and 11. All this after they beat North Carolina. Grant Nelson was terrific in that game. But, Chris, the question I have about Alabama is, can they hit threes in the dome, which always seems to be a challenge for teams that have, no matter how good a shooter is, it always seems to be different when you shoot in that atmosphere, and the basket sometimes feels as it like it's out in the middle of nowhere. But we'll see if that really affects what Alabama does.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's another one of these stories, like, where was this bunch? Alabama struggled down the stretch. They lost four of their last six, and one of the wins was in overtime. So
against Arkansas,
they really struggled. They were beat up a little bit. Latrell Reitzel has been out. He's out again. I think it's concussion protocol, and they're hoping that he'll come back because he's, by percentage, their best three-point shooter. So if he's able to play, that'll give them even more firepower. But I'll tell you, the game the other day, Mark Sears just went berserk, and then Jaron Stevenson, the freshman who's only played less than 17 minutes a game this year, and has only shot it, well, he was shooting it at 29% before the weekend, but he was dealing too. So, yeah, their game is always predicated on free throws, twos at the rims, and three-pointers. The only guy that's in Nate Oates' tenure there that's ever had permission to shoot it from the mid-range because he's so good at it is Aaron Estrada, who they brought in, and he's translated well from mid-major to high major, just as, helping Sears run the show. They both got a ton of assists. Estrada's got 168 and Sears has 146. And, their deal is, if you penetrate and you get to the rim, go. If you get fouled, make your free throws. They're both excellent free throw shooters. And if you're not, spray it to the wings. And on nights when Alabama is knocking them down, they can beat anybody. They proved it. Their early season schedule, they played a ton of people and beat some good people, but also lost three in a row to Purdue, Creighton, and Arizona. So in some ways, their appearance here is just as puzzling as NC State. We talked about it right after our Selection Sunday show. There's got to be somebody, or maybe somebody's, in the Final Four that you do not expect, and Lord knows who that's going to be. And I think in NC State, probably one of the most improbable that we've seen in recent years. And Alabama, just, you always thought they had it in them, but they weren't trending well until they were.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think out of the eight SEC teams that made it, I don't know that Alabama would have been the one that you picked to be the last one standing, just given how talented some of the other teams were. But I think this team plays better maybe as a team than some of the others during this really terrific run for Nate Oates. I thought the team last year was probably more talented. But this group has just figured it out, and they just had a great tournament run. They went over North Carolina, felt like one that was just huge for their program, and then they were able to finish a job and win that regional final, which is always so difficult. They beat Clemson there. I was really surprised that was only the second Elite Eight they had ever made. I was thinking they had been maybe in 87 that one year that Providence made that run out of that regional in Louisville, but they actually lost. And it ended up being Providence and Georgetown in the regional final that year. I went back and looked that one up. So Alabama now gets the fun challenge of facing UConn, which is just on an absolute roll. They had no trouble with Illinois, 77-52. Yeah, two double-doubles among the starters. Donovan Klingon had 22 points and 10 rebounds. Cam Spencer, 11-12 and 5 assists. They share the ball. They have great experience. They defend well. Illinois shot only 25% in that game. They're not always great from three, but when you have the inside presence, they do it. Not sure it really makes a lot of difference. And, Chris, they're trying to become only the third program since UCLA to repeat as champions. Duke did it in 91 and in 92, Florida in 06 and 07. And odds are good, I think, that they're going to join that elite group. This UConn team for Dan Hurley has just played better than everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, by far, this is a crazy stat. They've won their last 10 NCAA games by at least 13. Becoming the first team to win that many by double digits. They've trailed for only 28 seconds in this year's tournament and have beaten their four opponents by an average of 27.8 points. And that's just, you know, when Danny Hurley says we're bulletproof, he can get away with that. Most coaches would recoil at the thought of handing out bulletin board material, but Danny's like, come on, we got you. But what's crazy about them, they reloaded from last year. They lost a lot from their NCAA team, but they brought back some key guys. Donovan Klingon has really matured as a sophomore. It'll be interesting to see him versus Edie if they get that far. And then Tristan Newton, who came from East Carolina originally, has really delivered for them in a big way. He's on the a koozie ballot, final five point guards. But if you look at his numbers, 15 points, seven boards, he's handed out 232 assists. He's a triple-double waiting to happen, and it kind of revolves around him. But then they got this kid, I've mentioned him all year long. I love this kid. He's got a chance to be a 50-40-90 guy, Cam Spencer. He's averaging almost 15, shooting 92% from the line, 44 from three, and 487 from the field. He's really fit in. And then I said this last week, I think the unsung hero is Alex Caravan. His numbers are impressive too. 87 from the line, 38 from three, and almost 50% from the field. They just shoot. They've just got so many weapons. And their break is devastating. I mean, you wonder, There was a period of time. Remember the old Celtics? They were the masters of the break, and everybody ran the break. And then there was a period of time where nobody ran the break. And it's just like, dude, transition is killer. If you can pull it off, if you can defensive rebound and send your guards, because you have a chance to score before the defense sets up. It's just so elementary. And UConn does that better than anybody. And then when they're in the half court, they've got a beast like Klingon. And as I said, they've got tons of guys who can jack it from three. So no surprise that they're pounding people. I don't know. They may be the villains because of the persona that Danny Hurley sort of draws to himself. You know, I hear in real life, he's a pretty cool dude. But, you know, when he's plying his trade, working his craft, he gets a little ornery, and I think that fires up his team.
I think it's almost like in a fun way, though. Like, he doesn't bother me what he does because, I mean, his team backs it up. I'm old enough to remember seeing him play. In fact, he played against alma mater in the tournament in 1993. I saw Western play against Seton Hall when he was playing for them with Terry DeHare. But that when your team starts to get mentioned in the company of teams like 96 Kentucky and the early 90s UNLV teams for dominant runs in the NCAA tournament, you know you've got something. And I would be surprised if it's anybody other than UConn cutting down the nets next Monday night. But
me too.
First things first, it'll be Alabama against UConn in the second game on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, people started asking this last year, do we have to start considering UConn as a blue blood? Well, heck yeah, we do.
I think they
And
already were, weren't they?
I would have thought. I didn't think it was any question,
Maybe
but
not like traditionally going back lots of decades, but if you think back
right.
since, say, the 90s, they won that
Jim
first championship.
Calhoun's,
Jim Calhoun, they won the first
yeah.
championship in 99 when they beat Duke, and then they won multiple more since then.
Yep.
To me, in the last 25, 30 years, they're definitely a blue blood program.
No question. I mean, they don't go back, like 100 years like Kentucky and some of the others, but they're a nouveau riche, a bunch. And if they get six titles since what, 99? That's as blue gets to me.
I want to make a couple broadcasting notes about this Final Four. I was really happy for my friend and an old friend of our show, Chris Stewart from Alabama.
Oh
He
yeah.
finally gets there, and you think about his health battles and everything he's been through, and he's been with that program for a long time. I was super happy for him and Brian Pasek and Tom Stipe, who's been their producer and engineer for a lot of years. I know all those guys. They're awesome. Rob Blackman of Purdue, he's the play-by-play guy for the Boilermakers. I knew him years ago when he worked here in Nashville, and I've read some stories about him and just his journey too, and how he wanted to be a DJ when he was in college in Evansville, and now he's calling games in the Final Four for Purdue. So that's cool to see.
Right.
NC State's guy Gary Hahn is going to retire after this year. He's been the voice of the Wolfpack for 34 seasons, and he was thinking he was going to be done after the
He'd
ACC
be on the
tournament.
beach by now.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
he got about an extra month of his career, and I know he's awfully excited
Well, he
about being
did.
there. And for the national TV broadcast, Ian Eagle, who I've gotten a chance to know, is just a great guy and is, to me, the top of the list when it comes to play-by-play announcers. But he gets a chance to move into the top chair at the Final Four, replacing Jim Nantz, who stepped away after last season. There's a great profile of Ian Eagle on the Ringer website, if you want to check that out, talking about his childhood as the son of people who were showbiz parents, and just a really
Right.
interesting journey for him and his career, and just how he put in his time and now finally gets to be the number one announcer for the TV coverage of the NCAA tournament. So really cool stuff. I'm always interested in the broadcasting folks. Kind of done that for a few years myself, and I always dream about calling games in the Final Four and what that would be like. But happy for those guys to get that opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm also happy. This isn't the first time he's done it, but Bill Raftery, we've become friends over the years. I actually ran into him a couple of times this year on the circuit and was able to talk to him. And he's in his 80s now, and I don't know how much longer he'll go, but he's been one of my favorites since Send It In Jerome, when Pittsburgh's Jerome Lane smashed that backboard. And it's good to see him work the Final Four. He's still sharp and alert and beloved. So that's going to be a good crew. You throw Grant Hill on there,
And
head of
Tracy
USA
Wilson.
Basketball now,
Yes.
by the way, and that's going to be a good trio, I think.
They're great broadcasters, and Tracy Wilson's terrific doing sidelines too. They're all super nice people. I've met them all. But they're funny too. I love the way they do their broadcast because they call the game and they do it seriously, and they take calling the game seriously. But then they
Yeah.
also just have a lot of hilarious stuff that they do on the side. And I just
Oh,
think,
Raph could be a stand-in.
yeah.
He,
And so could Ian Eagle. Like they're both awesome. So,
yeah, he's
you
hilarious.
know,
But
and Grant Hill brings a great perspective of being an iconic player for, some iconic teams. So, yeah, that group
he
really
threw
works
the
well together. He
pass.
did throw the pass, and I've got a
Yeah.
picture of me shaking hands with him at the tournament in 2015, when Belmont played Virginia in Charlotte, and the number one crew then was on our game. It was Jim Nantz and Raftery and Grant Hill and Tracy Wolfson, and we got to meet all of them and spend time with them at the shoot around, and we took pictures. But there's a picture of me shaking hands with Grant Hill. It's like I'm shaking the hand that threw the pass, and
That's cool.
I said, "Grant, can you make the pass?"
We're gonna win. That's what he said in the
The
huddle. We're
first
gonna
thing I said was, "We're going to win this basketball game." I said, "Grant, can you make the pass? I wanted to get a positive reaction."
That's great. I don't know Tracy Wolfson, but I noticed on Vanderbilt's website the other day, they reproduced some tweets about your new head men's basketball coach. Hers was the first, and one of mine was the second. So Right there we go.
Yeah. About Coach Byington, who was introduced last week. I was really, really impressed with him. Did not get a chance to spend very much time with him. I kind of emceed the ceremony where he came out and he and our athletics director, Candace Lee, made some remarks. And then he came over and joined us for about an inning on our baseball broadcast. We were doing the baseball game with Missouri on TV, and he came in and sat in with us. And I think he was having a big time. I told him I'd let him call some of the plays if he wanted to, and he was laughing. But we had fun just talking to him and hearing his vision for the program. He's got a lot of energy, and it just seems like he's going to connect well with the fan base. And now the real work begins of putting together a coaching staff and a roster and all those things, and those are big challenges. A couple other coaching moves to talk about. Latest ones here in just the last couple of days made official. Andy Enfield, after several years at USC, goes to Southern Methodist to SMU. They're making their conference move, of course. And Oklahoma State hired the coach from my alma mater, Steve Lutz. He did a great job at Western Kentucky. Took him to the tournament, won over 20 games, but on the move again, he'll be the head coach of the Cowboys. So there have been a bunch of coaching moves. Couldn't remember if we talked about Louisville and the hire they made, but a lot of coaching changes just in the last couple weeks as teams see their seasons come to an end.
It was interesting about Steve Lutz, a couple of coaches, Danny Sprinkle being another one from Utah State, it parlayed 1 year success into moving on. I don't know who will get the job at your alma mater, but I'm sure that's a coveted job. But I think Steve Lutz was a good hire at Oklahoma State. Andy Enfield, I heard his name early on. All I can think of was he's had his fill of La La Land and wanted to get back, closer to where maybe he's from. And I think SMU moving to the ACC, that's a big step. They fired my buddy Rob Lanier, after just 2 years, and he won 20 this year. I guess they were looking for something different, but Andy Enfield's got a track record of success going all the way back to the FGCU Dunk City guys, which was one of the great things. You mentioned a couple of those hires that people might not think about, but us basketball nerds do. Ben McCollum, who is from Northwest Missouri State, one of the best D2 coaches in the country, finally gets his chance at Drake, which was replacing Darian DeVries, who departed for West Virginia. I think that's a great hire. Drew Joyce III, I didn't see this press conference, but they said he got emotional at Duquesne. Of course, he had played for Keith Dambrot at Akron, and he's also a high school teammate of LeBron James. So wherever Drew Joyce III goes, LeBron James' help won't be far off, because those guys are boys for life. That was a natural hire. And then Chris Mack gets the Charleston job away.
Yeah.
Not surprising. He's a good coach. I just think he got in over his head in Louisville with some of the situation there and the pressure there, just trying to get that back to where it was when Pitino had it really rolling. And then to me, one of the most underrated hires that you won't hear about, Southern Illinois was able to hire Scott Nagy from Wright State. He's been an excellent coach ever since he was at South Dakota State. He's just one of those guys that has worked in sort of relative obscurity, but yet in coaching circles and in basketball nerd circles like mine, just a respected guy, and you wondered when he was going to get a little step up. And, certainly the Missouri Valley is a step up.
NIT semifinals. Speaking of the Missouri Valley, Indiana State will play Utah, and then it'll be Georgia and Seton Hall as those teams face off. Those games are actually tonight as we record this, but another chance for Indiana State to shine. I still think they should have been in the big dance, but that's probably a discussion for another time. But those are the semifinals. They're playing at Hinkle Fieldhouse this season.
Yeah, it's going to be cool to see Robbie Avila, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's not in like your best shape, but the dude, like DJ Burns, man, he's got a flair for the game. He can pass it. He can shoot threes. He's great. So, it'll be cool to see him. I'm going to watch the NIT. I've watched it throughout. I've wanted to see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar do his thing, and I just think that the NIT, I wonder about it. We talked about this before, but I didn't realize 17 schools from mostly from power conferences said no to the tournament, and there's a wonder whether it has a continued presence going forward with all these power conferences. They're going to demand more NCAA slots. Tom Crean had the best quote, though. He said, "In the bigger picture of this whole thing, we're supposed to be developing players. The powers that be are spending so much time figuring out how they're going to manage this new world. But we better not lose sight of the fact that the games still matter, even if it's not an NCAA tournament game." And I really agree with that. And you can bet Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's psyched.
And they'll get the point.
It's going to be great. And, it's good to see my buddy Mike White get his Georgia team that far. Again, he was a guy that Georgia could have easily said no, like the 17 other schools did, but they wanted to play. And I just think that's good for your program when you can keep playing and keep getting better under the crucible of competition. So we'll see. Utah, Indiana State, Georgia, Seton Hall. Our buddy Fran Fraschilla will be calling the games. He posted a photo of Hinkle. I did that when I first showed up there, and I tweeted back, "The Mecca." Of course, that's where Hoosiers were shot. And if you're going to have it somewhere, that's a great place for it.
Yeah, that's a good spot. I've been there too, and it's just a special gym, the home of the Butler Bulldogs there in Indianapolis. I know we're mostly a men's basketball show, but want to say congrats to the four teams in the women's Final Four. NC State, they have both their teams in the Final Four. They'll play South Carolina, UConn against Iowa. Should be fun to watch on Friday and Sunday. Those games are in Cleveland. I would expect South Carolina to repeat as champions, but there is a lot of star power in this Final Four. You got, of course, the superstar Caitlin Clark for the Iowa Hawkeyes, and Paige Becker has been a big star for years for UConn. They'll face off. I watched some of the Iowa and LSU rematch last night, and that was special to watch. And Caitlin Clark's unbelievable. I mean, she just pulls up from Steph Curry range and knocks down threes from about 30 feet. And her passing ability is terrific. Just one of those must-see players. I mean, I was thinking about when Michael Jordan was playing for the Bulls, and it was kind of getting toward the end of his career, and he's playing on those great teams. I never turned down an opportunity to watch him play on TV. I almost like forced myself to watch because I knew I'd never see anything like it again. And she's become appointment TV for lots and lots of folks, and it just made a big impact in the game. But I really expect in the end, I think South Carolina probably win it again. They're just so tough. They've reloaded and they've rolled through the first few games of the tournament so far. But the Women's Final Four will be this week as well on Friday and Sunday in Cleveland, Ohio. So, man, it's going to be a fun week of basketball ahead. Chris and I will be headed out to the desert this coming weekend. And again, Chris, congratulations on being named to the U.S. Basketball Writers Hall of Fame. Looking forward to that part of the trip. And, of course, seeing the national championship game, whichever combinations of teams it might be next Monday night out in Arizona.
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy. Of all the friends I've ever had, I couldn't think of a better friend to accompany me than you. So I thought it was gracious of you. I mean, I didn't even ask. Without hesitation, you said you were coming, and that just meant a lot to me. And I'd be glad to spend it with you. And of course, Patty will be along for the ride. She's no baller, but she'll get an earful. We put her in the middle aisle on the plane. She'll get an earful, and we'll catch her up to speed.
There you go. Well, it's going to be fun. Everybody enjoy the games this week, and we'll talk to you next time on the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast.